This is Barbara Ridenour, returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 22, 2014. It's about 2:30. We'll continue with the obituaries. Carol A. Brewer, 71, of Decatur, died Tuesday, April 19, 2016. A memorial visitation will be held from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday, April 24th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. Memorials may be made to Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois Charitable Fund or Evergreen Senior Living. Karen Irene Buschenschutz, 71, of Decatur, died Sunday, April 17, 2016. Services were today at 10 a.m. in St. Paul's Lutheran Church. Visitation was 1 hour before services in the church. Burial was at 2 p.m. today at Nokomis Cemetery. Arrangements are by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Memorials may be made to the Lutheran School Association or Alzheimer's Association. David A. Grant, 67, of Decatur, died April 19, 2016. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Monday, April 25th, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Burial will follow at Pleasant Valley Cemetery in Kenny, with military honors. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the David A. Grant Memorial Fund. Evelyn Jean Joint, 84, of Decatur, died Monday, April 18, 2016. Private family services were held at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home with private burial in Graceland Cemetery. Louise Ellen Lesher, 80, died Monday, April 18, 2016. Cremation rites were accorded and a memorial service was held. Will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 23rd, in the Joins Funeral Home, Illinois Route 130 South in Villa Grove. There will be no visitation. Memorials can be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Mildred Ann Phillips McAdam, 89, of Decatur, died Wednesday, March 30th, 2016. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, April 23rd, at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Decatur. Visitation with family will take place after the service in the church library. In honor of her, Mickey, a special fund has been established at the Decatur Public Schools Foundation. In lieu of flowers, the family invites donations to be made in her name to the foundation. Dixie Lee Rucker, 79, of Mount Zion, died Wednesday, April 21, 2016. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 26, in Pilgrim Lutheran Church of Decatur. Burial will be in Mount Zion Township Cemetery. Visitation will be on Monday evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, from 10 a.m. until service time and from 10 a.m. until service time at the church on Tuesday morning. Memorials may be made to Pilgrim Lutheran Church. Charles E. Chuck Streety Jr., 80, of Decatur, died Wednesday, April 20th, 2016. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, April 25th, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Private burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois. Now we'll turn to the opinion page and continue with letters to the editor. Golden K. Kiwanis thanks the community for support. Decatur Golden Cake Kiwanis would like to send a big thank you to the Forsyth Applebee's for hosting our Flapjack fundraiser on April 9th. The success of this event depended on community support, so thanks to all who attended. The money we raised will stay in our community to help support Decatur Golden Cake Kiwanis sponsor the 4-5-6 Girls Basketball Showcase Saturday at Millikan University on April 23rd. Kudos to all. Signed, Sharon Cunningham, Decatur Golden K. Kiwanis. To Michael Luxner, thanks for the memories. Michael Luxner, what to say, words fail. In The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, a beloved classic, the fox says, "Here is my secret. It's quite simple. One sees clearly only with the heart. Anything essential is invisible to the eyes." So, Michael Luxner, from the heart, just as Bob Hope often said, thanks for the memories. Signed, John Dunn, Decatur. Visitor thanks Decatur Police for their service. I am a resident of Texas, in Decatur visiting and working. I had the occasion of interacting with two Decaturs of Decatur's finest the other day. I say Decatur's finest because that is the way my family and I were treated by these two gentlemen. These police officers took the time out of a busy day to help my family in a way above and beyond what would normally be expected when we were in need of their help. I just wanted to let you know that if you are looking for someone to look up to, look no further than your Decatur Police Department. We sincerely thank those officers for their time and effort for our family. Signed, Marty Robbins, Amarillo, Texas. Park District should reopen Lakeshore Drive through Park. Time for another change. A lot of citizens of Decatur sure would like to see the Decatur Park District Board step up to the plate and reopen Lakeshore Drive through Nelson Park. Why did they close it, and why is it still closed? Nothing is going on at the park. It looks the same as the day it was closed. The Park District has no money, and the state isn't going to give them money, so why not make people happy and reopen it? I would like someone from the Park Board to please explain why this is still closed. Taxpaying citizens have been asking this question for a long time. The sad thing is, this road used to belong to the city. I guess they shouldn't have given it to the Park District. Signed, John Caracachos of Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the Symphony Guild of Decatur for their annual instrument petting zoo that allows potential musicians to try out some instruments. The event was held for 3rd and 4th graders at Muffley School. The idea is that when students sign up for an orchestra or band next fall, they'll have an idea of which instrument they like. The Guild also maintains a lending library of instruments, allowing low-income students to participate in band or orchestra without buying or renting an expensive instrument. Thumbs up to Operation Cleanup, which took place last Friday in Decatur. The event was manned by student volunteers from MacArthur, Eisenhower, and St. Teresa School High Schools. Students at MacArthur and Eisenhower fanned out from their schools to clean up areas while the St. Teresa students concentrated on the old King's Orchard area. Students received T-shirts, water bottles, gloves, trash bags, and first aid kits. Thanks to assistance from Caterpillar Incorporated, State Farm agent Bob Lupik, HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, and Decatur Rotary 180. Thumbs down to the New York Daily News for reporting that St. Louis Cardinal baseball fans hurled racial slurs at Chicago Cubs outfielder Jason Hayward. Hayward, who played with the Cardinals last year, was booed lustily in this week's game in St. Louis, but the Daily News report about the racial slurs was based solely on fan comments on Twitter. There is no evidence from the multiple game broadcasts that any slurs were yelled, and Hayward said he didn't hear anything offensive. If slurs were used, that's unacceptable. But so were accusations not backed up by any facts. Thumbs up to Decatur's Barton Cole, who was recently recognized by the Federal Aviation Administration for his extraordinary 50 years of flying. Cole was presented with the prestigious Wright Brothers Master Pilot Award to recognize his more than 11,000 hours of flight time and his longevity in the cockpit. Cole said it was the FAA's way of recognizing pilots who, after 50 years, still have the same number of takeoffs and landings. Thumbs up to the Decatur and Macon County for looking for Lincoln Steering Committee members who are working to get the wayside exhibits back in shape. Due to a manufacturing problem, the exhibits had worn out earlier than expected. The steering committee decided to do something about it. The manufacturer agreed to place the signs statewide, and the steering committee, with the help of Christie Foltz Incorporated and other volunteers, got the exhibits back to looking like they should. The steering committee, which had gone dormant for a time, agreed to keep working on ways to improve these exhibits. Tim Kaine. Prince couldn't be understood. Not that he cared, but the world never understood Prince. The Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, among the most successful and most prolific musical artists of his generation, died Thursday at age 57. After his blast into the mainstream in the early 1980s, Prince continued to work as he always had. His head was full of ideas, largely music and how to stage it. The only thing that changed was his audience and how mainstream it was. How mainstream was Prince when he ruled the pop world? His career includes 37 Grammy nominations and 7 victories. He had 4 number one albums and an additional 12 made the top 10. Not by definition a singles artist, he nevertheless had 5 number one hits. When Doves Cry, Let's Go Crazy, Cream, Kiss, and Bat Dance, and 13 more top 10 songs. And the last time an Academy Award was given for Best Original Song Score was 1984, when Prince won for Purple Rain. So as Prince pursued his art, the public persona that was at best a baffling enigma turned into, in view of too many in his large audience, a pain who seemed to do things to get attention. That's what can happen when the world builds a box around you, and the box can only contain a portion of what you are. Prince failed to release an album only 5 years between his 1978 debut and 2010. And in 5 of those years between 78 and 2010, he released at least 2 albums. Sprinkled throughout his discography are any number of multiple album sets. It was impossible for many of his ardent fans to keep up. The people who found him via Purple Rain and MTV have long since abandoned him. So for that mainstream audience, he's forever the tiny man in purple, dancing and singing risque lyrics. For some, his 2007 Super Bowl performance in a rainstorm was a reminder that he was still performing. That 12-minute show is widely regarded as the greatest Super Bowl halftime show in history. For Prince, it was another day at work. A good day, certainly, but not necessarily the pinnacle. By societal standards, Prince's world was a weird one, and his life was an odd one. He followed his muse wherever it would lead him. For some artists, the muse leads to a logical direction, and the changes can be gradually charted. Prince's biggest issue may have been an overactive artistic mind. It led him to announce and submit albums, then pull them back at the last minute. It led him to changing his name to a symbol and to writing slave on the side of his face during a dispute with his record company. It kept him away from the 1980s benefits like Live Aid. It led him to infuriating fans with his attempts to figure out what he could do with the internet and making promises on which he didn't follow through. And in the midst of all that, he was always writing. He created pieces for so many other artists. Scholars may never know everything he wrote. Each Prince fan has a favorite era and a period of the man's artistic life where they just stopped paying attention because he was too far out, too strange, or just too much. Some discographies credit him with more than 600 released songs. Web rumors have regularly insisted he has between 500 and 1,000 unreleased songs finished and ready to be released. Musicians who have worked with him tell stories of recording complete albums that appeared to vanish into wherever Prince's recordings vanish. It's hard to find a person neutral on Prince. They either loved the performer, or everything about him, irritated them. Perhaps one of the biggest issues was his inability to uncover Prince's big picture. His style shifts, his incredibly prolific nature meant the target was always moving. There was really no time to properly assess, because there was always something new nosing its way into the oeuvre. If there truly is close to 100 albums of material still hidden away, maybe we'll never be able to grasp exactly what Prince was. What we do know, however, is he helped shape music as it exploded into a global force, and he was still shaping his own music, even as the global force waned. In the life section, Central Christian Preschool marks 50th. To the casual observer, it looked like Becky Flanders and her granddaughter Maddie Morgan, too, were simply playing kitchen together the other day, but they were also continuing a family tradition that began nearly 30 years ago when Flanders' mother-in-law brought Maddie's mom to Central Christian Church's preschool. I loved playing with this wooden kitchen set that I think some of the rooms still have, recalls Ginger Morgan, 32, of Clinton. It's comforting to think my kids are having the same experience as I had. Morgan and her husband Brian have a 5-year-old son, Caden, attending. Indeed, the church's preschool has been making memories for 50 years now, and will mark the milestone Sunday afternoon with an open house. It's a nice way to get current and past facilities and teachers together to celebrate, said Shirley Brooks, a member of the church, who's on the preschool board. It's a huge accomplishment. Visitors will be able to participate in children's activities led by current and former teachers, view then and now displays, and tour the church's newly reopened west entrance area that includes new restrooms outside the church nursery and preschool, a new office for preschool director Jennifer Van Dyke, and a security door limiting access to the classrooms. The parents will start waiting in the entrance area until about 8:50 a.m., Van Dyke said. School starts at 9. We want to give the teachers their full preparation time. The half-day preschool opened in the fall of 1965, just shy of the 15 pre-kindergartners it needed to meet expenses, but had that number by the time the school year was over in the spring of 1966. Among those first students that year was Joseph Sauer, son of the late Don and Bonnie Sauer, who were longtime members of the church. Classes for 3-year-olds were soon added, and the program moved into the Nichols Education Wing, added to the west side of the church in 1988. 47 children are currently enrolled for one of the preschool's 4 classrooms, one for 2-year-olds and their caregivers on Thursday mornings, one for 3-year-olds Mondays through Wednesday mornings, and one for 4-year-olds Monday through Thursday mornings, and one for pre-kindergartners Monday through Friday mornings. Church membership is not required for enrollment, but the Flanders and Morgans are members of the Central Christian. Van Dyke said the children have chapel once a week when a pastor gives a short Bible lesson, but the school's focus is on teaching academic and social skills. The idea is to welcome as many people as possible so we don't teach religion, she said. Trent Moore, 34, of rural Warrensburg, is another alum who has sent his own children to the preschool. Daniel, now 6, was a student for 18 months, and Lily, 3, is in her second year there. He and his wife Angela chose Central Christian's preschool, partly because he has such fond memories of his own 2 years there, one with longtime former teacher Betty Chapman. Daniel's teachers did a fantastic job getting him ready for kindergarten, Moore said. The school's longevity is a testament to the high quality of education they provide and the high quality teachers who serve there. Kay Villarreal, a longtime teacher who mostly taught 4-year-olds, sent all 3 of her kids to the preschool and eventually saw her son marry a woman he originally met there. The former Christy Crawford actually had a different boyfriend back then because she thought Aaron Villarreal was annoying, but the pair began dating after she transferred to Millikan University during her senior year there. Aaron, 25, graduated from Millikan in 2013. Christy graduated in 2014, and last summer they married at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Our moms would carpool together because we lived in the same neighborhood, Villarreal said in a telephone interview from his home in Bloomington, Indiana. My wife remembers me from those days more than I remember her, because she says I was pretty obnoxious. Pastor reopens former Lovington Church. With much excitement and energy, Pastor Jill Walker reopened the doors of the Revival Church of Lovington earlier this month, a church she once led for more than 20 years. Walker and her husband Mike bought the building last October for $10,000. The Walkers also lead the Mattoon Revival Church located at 2520 Shelby Avenue. The road they traveled to regain ownership of the Lovington Church wasn't an easy one, but Walker said she harbors no ill feelings about what transpired with the church that she once agreed to give away and bought back. Jill Walker Ministries, JWM, first took ownership of the Lovington Church in May of 1989 and began church services that June. She said they paid $15,000 for the building. She led that congregation until May 2010 when she decided she wanted to search for a church closer to their home in Mattoon. When closing the doors in 2010, she said she, along with the church board, decided to give the building away, completely furnished, to another denomination. She said she had communicated her wishes to the overseer of that group for the building to remain a house of worship. Walker said she didn't get that part of the deal in writing. Years later, in September 2015, Walker said she was disappointed to learn that from a former congregation member, while visiting an area pumpkin patch, that her previous church had been sold, empty of any furnishings. She was told the new buyer was going to turn the church into a restaurant and bar. The colleague gave her the name and number of the new buyer, who confirmed his intentions, she said. Walker said the building is rich in history, as it was built in 1915. It was a Catholic church until 1988, she said. It became her goal to rescue the church and preserve its history. Her first step was to contact personnel at the church in Sullivan to find that the property sold for $5,000. After praying about the issue, she said she decided to offer $10,000 for the building, a request that was at first denied. Several days after that, she made the offer, the man called her while she was on vacation. She said he decided he wanted to sell it and use the funds to pay off his home. The Walkers now have invested more than $79,000 to renovate and furnish the church. It is now complete with upgrades, including improvements in the stained glass windows, pews, a sound system, a piano, drums, a new kitchen and bathroom, and a nursery. Pastor Walker enhances her services with a music ministry, as she is a seasoned musician playing the piano, guitar, drums, flute, and clarinet, as well as vocals. She is joined by her daughter Abby, who also plays the violin and sings. If I had not gone to the pumpkin patch that day, then I probably would never have gotten it back, she said. Walker is ordained by the Evangelical Church Alliance and has a degree in theology from the International College of Excellence, she said. Mike Walker is Vice President of Construction for Colcon of Sullivan and also serves as Assistant Pastor for their Revival Church in Mattoon. The couple plans to continue their morning worship services at 10 a.m. at the Mattoon site. They reside in Mattoon and have 5 children. 2 are still at home. Both churches are more than 100 years old, and a granite memorial will be placed in the front yard of the Lovington location, telling the history of the church and honoring its 100 years of existence. Claudia Quigg for the Herald and Review. Parents, children have different goals. Her mother waited patiently on the dry side of the shower curtain. Jane's shower seemed to be taking an awfully long time. "Are you okay in there?" Mom asked with waning patience. "Yep," replied Jane joyfully. "Did you put conditioner on your hair?" Mom followed up. With that, Jane leaned out of the shower curtain, beaming. "Yes," she exclaimed, 12 times. With that, Mom made a mental note to add conditioner to the grocery list and helped a sweet-smelling Jane exit the shower. One more tip of the hat to the vast divide that separates the agenda of a parent from that of a child. Parents' agenda is clear. Complete the task and move on. Make the bed, pick up the clothes, put on your shoes, wash that condition out of your hair once, Parents have too much to do, and they are always aware of the ticking clock. Children, on the other hand, see every task as a chance to practice skills they long to master. Finally, old enough to take charge of her own shampooing, Jane approached it without caution, determined to enjoy it to the max. Using the conditioner on her own, measuring it out onto her hand, rubbing it through her hair, and rinsing it out, set the stage for her to enjoy her own developmental agenda, which is establishing an independent and capable autonomy. It was so pleasurable, in fact, she repeated it a few extra times, but who's counting? After all, one good turn deserves another. 12 times gave her more practice. Jane has now earned her black belt in hair conditioning. I recall one afternoon when, after a good playtime, I knelt on the classroom floor with Jared, a happy 4-year-old boy. When it was time to put away the blocks, he made a game of it, placing the blocks on the shelf in time to singing Old MacDonald Had a Farm. On each downbeat, we placed a block heavily, making our own percussion accompaniment to the tune. When we put the final block on the shelf with a victorious E-I-E-I-O, I thought we were finished. But with one swoop of his arms, Jared pushed all the blocks back onto the floor as he yelled, "Let's do that again!" Silly me, I thought we were cleaning up from block play so that we could move on to my next planned activity. But Jared was still rejoicing in the pleasure of our percussion experiment, and he wasn't ready to see it end. This collision of our agenda with our kids sets off skirmishes in our homes. At every age, children are compelled to work toward their own goals, fueled by a powerful intrinsic motivation. Unfortunately, it rarely lines up with what mom and dad have in mind, which is not to say that parents' goals are unimportant. Those ever-present tasks must be accomplished, and dedicated parents understand the value of helping kids learn from them. Children really do need to learn skills to make their beds, pick up their clothes, put on their own shoes, but maybe also understanding kids' own goals will help parents employ a little patience when children seem to deviate from the plan in pursuit of their own joy. After all, Jared and I did have a great time as we sang to the blocks once more, and Jane's mom just found a giant-sized bottle of conditioner on sale. In state news, property tax freeze champ Rauner says house plan not enough. Springfield. Republican Bruce Rauner says a House-approved property tax freeze doesn't go far enough. The House approved a freeze Thursday that doesn't apply to home rule governments like Chicago, but it prohibits school districts from getting any more in property tax revenue than they did in 2015 unless voters approve an increase in a referendum. The 71-31 vote on the proposal by Democratic Representative Jack Franks of Marengo included GOP support, but Rauner's tax freeze plan includes letting local governments control costs by restricting labor union power and limiting wages on public construction jobs. Rauner spokeswoman Catherine Kelly says a true relief package would include the local government reforms. Franks is seeking a Senate sponsor for his bill. The bill is HB 696. That's all we have time for today's Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 22, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a great weekend and week to follow.